I think there is a lot of things that fascinate me, but the creativity, how you can use this model not only in the therapy room, but also in organization, in schools, and what people really do with that. So yes, I seem very curious about what happened. Yeah.
That is Simply Focused with Elva Cherney and Dominic Gilda for Live and Joy and Ease.
Are you ready for this new episode? Then please welcome your hosts, Elfie Cherney and Dominic Godin.
A joyful hello and welcome from Montreal, and welcome back to the Simply Focus podcast to episode number 84.
We just spent some wonderful days at the SFBTA conference, and we're here today with Jocelyn Corman. Hi, Jocelyn.
Hi, Dominic and Elfie.
We are very grateful and excited to have you here, Jocelyn. Thank you very much for taking the time for the podcast, and thank you very much for all the lovely conversations we had throughout this conference. We met each other for the first time in Vienna, and I remember having a very touching conversation with you. So thank you very, very much for being here and sharing your work with us today.
Yeah, thank you very much for having and asking me for that. And as Harry said, I will do my best, and then we see what happens.
Jocelyn, you were an early adopter of solution focus in therapy in your work that you do. You're a solution focused therapist, you're a solution focused supervisor and trainer. And together with Harry Corman, you have an institute in Sweden for solution focused brief therapy. And it's so amazing to see how you're still fascinated and still your eyes shine up when you talk about solution focus or when you do solution focus, and after such a long time. And this always fascinates us, and we're very happy to have you here and talk with you about that and many other things today.
So what is it that fascinates you with solution focus?
Yeah, it's amazing after all these years that I really still enjoy listening to people, what people do with this fantastic model. I think there is a lot of things that fascinate me, but the creativity, how you can use this model not only in the therapy room, but also in organization, in schools, and what people really do with that. So yes, I seem very curious about what happened. Yeah.
And the curiosity is something that shines through your work and throughout your work. So I really wonder, how did you and have you been maintaining this curiosity over so many years? It was the 80s when you came in touch with solution focus. So it's almost 40 years already.
I think the curiosity is, it's about a model, but it's very much about people. So because of that, you meet new people, you are curious about who they are and what they do and how they manage, and you never know before you start asking. So I think it's that. The model solution focus is about to be curious about people, and we never end to do that.
And how was that in the beginning? How did you get to know solution focus, and what fascinated you back then?
I remember a conversation Steve DeShazer had with a family. I was sitting behind a one-way mirror, and there was this woman sitting in a room. She was so nervous because it was a very strange room, you know, with a big mirror, and she knew that people were sitting behind a mirror. So she was very nervous, almost shaking and making things with her hair. And then Steve came in the room and he said to her, "Hi, strange room there." And it was like she just came down, and then he sit down and he start talk to her. And it was like a little bit surprising, and he did something at the time. I am not sure what I remember what he did, but it is something different from the first minute he came in this room. And then after that, I had different training before, family therapy training and other training you get when you work in psychiatry. But this one was so sympathetic. And it was so human, and you could see how people become more normal and adorable. So it makes something with me to do the work, to see the work. So I think it's what's fascinated me.
So it did something with you, or it does something with people who do that, does something with us, and does something with our clients. And I assume that your work has also changed over the years. So what were the important elements in your work in the last almost 40 years that are now relevant for your work today?
Well, you have difficult questions. I think from the beginning, I saw Steve and Insu working. I saw a lot of my colleagues trying to work with solution focus. So for me, it was very much about trying to do the same. It was very much in my head. I remember one of my first client I tried to work solution focus with. I prepare myself. I had a paper in my pocket with questions, and I started the discussion with this man, and I had the first question in my head, and he answered properly, and I could use the answer, and then I just get lost. And at the time, we worked very much in team, so I said to that poor man, I said, I have to take time out and talk to my team. So I went out the room, and my supervisor at the time, she said, you know what? You started very well. It's enough for today. No, you go back and you do your usual stuff. And it was really a relief. But what I mean is that from the start, it was very much in my head. And then eventually, because I liked it, I liked the question, I could remember, this question maybe will fit. And then it became more and more like your colon vertebral, your spine, and you just do. And it switched from thinking about what I am supposed to ask no to be more curious about, she said that. Oh, so fascinating. I could ask that and that and that. So this process from your head to be more present in the room and to be able to be curious about the person and to, as Insu said, trust the model. Even it's a very difficult situation the person is talking about, trust the model. Yeah.
And I wonder what helped you to get there, to trust the model.
It was such a privilege to have colleagues, because from the start, working with Harry and his colleagues, and then working with my colleagues, everybody tried to work solution focused. So we had this privilege to be able to watch each other work. So it was about doing myself, meeting a session with client, watching at colleagues doing that, watching tape, reading a lot of stuff. Yeah.
And I think it's really important to highlight that this was a time where solution focus just started to emerge and where the seeds were planted but not yet spread. So it was a time where there were all these problem-focused models, and it was a very experimental time, I guess.
Yeah, it was. But we were working in a very generous environment, so we were able to do that. So I think it's important, all this teamwork. And then every year, and sometimes twice a year, we had Steve and Insu coming back, doing a workshop. And every time we learn something new, and they were so generous. We could watch a lot of tape, different situations. And Steve and Itsu used to stay with us at the house, and we have more talking, and you know, so this way.
So it's really constant immersion in solution focus and in watching others work and reflecting your own work, reading, seeing tapes, and kind of being in this world with Steve and Insu and all the others.
And you're working as therapist, so you still do clinical work. You're a supervisor and you give solutions. solution-focused trainings and those things mutually influence each other. What is it that fascinates you about doing those three things?
Yeah, I realize that when I get, how do you say that, warm in my clothes, I could start to try to do some teaching. So doing teaching means that you have to phrase for yourself and for people you talk to. This process is a learning process, even for me. So the teaching gave me some more learning, the supervision, another kind of learning, and the clinical work. Of course, learn all the time. Every time you met a new client, you learn something from that person. And what is fascinating is that if you are preparing some teaching, you maybe focus on something particular. For example, miracle question. So next time, the same week, if I see a client, I will maybe focus a little bit more on the miracle question because it influences each other. And then maybe I realize that if I am talking in supervision, if I am talking about using scale, I realize that I don't do that much anymore. But maybe next session we do that again. So it influences each other and it grows that way. So what I did 20 years ago, I think is a little bit different from what I do today.
So what is different?
Surprise! that question comes. I think what is different is that from the beginning, I was very careful with using the miracle question, doing things in order. So the common project, the miracle question, and then scale, and then take a break and think about what happened and come back with the summary. But today, I think my colleagues would say, yes, she's working solution focused, but maybe she never asked a miracle question. Maybe I never ask any scale question, but I think the spirit is there. The thinking about and the curiosity about what people want, it's about that, yeah.
It sounds like kind of going away from a strict process, going away from tools to this curiosity and also trusting the model.
Yeah.
In this sense, not needing the tools that much anymore.
Yeah. So still, I am very grateful for that there is a way to describe the model and you can learn that and that techniques. I remember something from England saying that it's just about maybe two questions or three questions. But when you do some teaching, if you say to somebody, it's just about three questions, learn these questions. I don't think it's that easy. So, yeah, I think it's very helpful to have these different questions you can ask and to learn some of them, yeah.
That also reminds me of my own journey, my own way of learning solution focus, and also the discussion about tools and stance and how those two things influence each other. And I remember really how worthwhile it was to have questions and tools and exactly knowing how to apply them. And then with more and more experience and all those different conversations where you did it differently, on the one hand, trusting, or I would say knowing that it works, and on the other hand, becoming much more flexible and just, yeah, maybe moving from questions to focuses, where you just kind of know where you want to focus on or what could be a good next focus when you hear what the client is saying.
Yeah, because still the main focus is there. The main focus is about what people want to achieve or to be different, how they want to be in the world and what happened already. So it's still about that. But with that in your head, you can really do the work in many different ways.
At this conference, you were giving a workshop on microanalysis together with Harry. And I wonder what difference is looking with a microanalysis lens on things made for you and your work.
I would say microanalysis is maybe more Harry's area of competence, but I found very helpful to tape a conversation and to look at this tape moment by moment, because our memory about what happened are ordinarily not very good. So when you look at the tape and when you can stop the tape, and when you can show, for example, in a supervision, when you can show that if I, as a therapist, want to be more concentrated, focused, caring about that and that and that, maybe I could find moments in my film, things I'm doing, and the picture will tell me that I am doing that. So I like using tape because of that and many other reasons. Yeah.
What are some of those other reasons you like using tapes?
Because I think that if you want to be better on something, if you tape your conversation, as I say before, you can find moments that you do that, but you can also, with the help of colleagues and your own reflection, you can find so many different things you can do. So it's a wonderful opportunity for being more reflective.
Thank you so much for highlighting that, because we truly think that taping our own work and looking at the work, and particularly what you highlight, looking for moments where it works and doing more of that, is such a brilliant way of learning, if not the most brilliant way of learning, at least in my view. So yeah, thank you for highlighting that.
And now that we're really fascinated by microanalysis, and we weren't there in the beginning with the stories we heard that people, and maybe also you, were taping your conversations already 40 years ago and learning from the tapes. And still I'm wondering, what is different with microanalysis and looking at a tape in this way? Or what was different back then? How did you look at the tapes back then?
I think microanalysis, it had something that we did not have before. It had something smaller, because with the help of Ilan and the transcript, you can go back and see maybe 1 second of what happened between two people. And with microanalysis, we are more aware that we have to have the two people talking to each other on the picture. And we did not have that from start. So very often we have the client and we did not saw the therapist. And it was very much about just half picture. So now with the microanalysis, we are more aware what happened in between.
So it's about slowing down and really putting it under the kind of microscope. And it's about highlighting the interactions and focus on that even more.
Yeah.
And now, of course, I'm curious, you're not only looking at your own work, but also in supervision, looking at the work of your supervisees. So what do you do in supervision, or what would we see you doing if we could observe you doing supervision?
I think I can say that I always ask for people's best hopes, what they want to get out of talking. So in a way, it's the same with the client compared to supervision, that I have to know that. And I have to know that because the person, I hope we get what she or he wants. But I also have to know that and to highlight that, because very often we have a group supervision in Sweden. So it's also a way to engage all the group to be helpful, not with everything, maybe with that and that and that. So I have always almost this question, yeah.
How do you do that, involve the group and get their support?
So I suppose I try to write the supervisee expectation. I start there and then I ask everybody in the group to be aware of what is there. because my primary, what I care about, is to be helpful for that person and hopefully also for the group, but it's secondary. Yeah. So I will write this question, and sometimes I have to ask a little bit more precise what people want when they said that and that and that, and what their client will notice when that happen. So with my question, I moved the situation from the supervision room to the situation outside next time the person will see the client.
And how does it go on?
What happened then is that depending if the group is working solution focused or not, if the group is working solution focused, I will invite the rest of the group to ask questions like exceptions, like scale, what is already, and things like that. Sometimes I will use reflecting team. So I invite the people in the group, not the supervisee, only the rest of the group, to think about if you were in that situation, what will you do? As you know your colleagues, what do you think she could do or he? And maybe if you have a crazy idea about what could be done, what could it be? So it could be one way of using the group. And then when we have this discussion in between, I will ask the supervisee if she is okay, if she wants to say something, to ask something, or just say thank you. And the next time we met, I will follow up that. Was it something useful in the conversation we had last time? What was useful? What did you do with that? And a small interview about how come she could do that. And then we left and take the next case.
I very much like the idea of the following up and using the in-between after the first supervision round.
And it looks like your group supervision is also a good training to ask questions for participants and to reflect your own questions and really stay in this solution-focused immersion, you could say, not only in the therapy room, but also in the supervision.
I'm still kind of curious about what we talked earlier, coming to training, supervision and clinical work, and about what you learned from those three. And I wonder, you first did clinical work and then you started to give trainings and then you started to give supervision.
Yeah, after clinical work, I had some supervision with a couple of groups and I found out that it was quite fun. And then I started doing a little bit of training together with colleagues, because I don't really like to see myself on a scene and handling with a big group. It takes a lot of energy for me to do that. So it was not really easy for me to get there. But sometimes, and it's very strange, when I realized that I know what to talk about, and I found that it was really funny to talk about that, and then the training became more comfortable and enjoyable for me.
And you should see her shining now.
Yeah.
And you said you did the supervision and it was fun. So what was it that, you know, intrigued you? What was the part that was fun for you and that made a difference?
The supervision is a bit tricky because I can have a lot of wonderful ideas, but it's not me doing the work. It's somebody else doing the work. So it's like a racket, you know, with two
launches.
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly. So what I found fascinating was that it was a bit tricky to find out what this person could be comfortable to do with the ideas. So of course, as usual, you ask what idea the person has. And after that, maybe they even want more ideas. So it is about to find out what ideas she or he has to use this and this and this idea. So I found very often to mix, to have a little bit supervision and question, interviewing the supervisee, but also to do some small teaching and to have this mix and then to interview again. Is there something there that you think could be useful for you? So the key word is, what is useful for you? What is possible? What is useful?
What is possible and what is useful? I love that.
And it's always great to have someone here who has a solution-focused partner. And when Elfie and I got together, we just realized how much more learning there was through this immersion also in everyday life. And about the talking about, let's say, clients or solution-focused things that we read or get trainings we do and things we come up with and reflecting that with a partner.
So assuming that solution-focused also made a difference for you and Harry, what differences does solution-focused make in your relationship and in the way you talk with each other or about things?
In many ways, it helps to have somebody that understand and can help. I mean, it will be very difficult to be married to maybe a psychoanalyst.
Yes, I get an idea about that.
Yeah, but sometimes at the same time, it's important to me not to fall down in when I talk about something that worry me, private things, that he does not become my therapist. I don't want that. So it's about finding this balance, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a very important message and thing. And to me, it's one thing that's very interesting. Also, when I, you know, saw the two of you together, it feels like there is a lot of love between the two of you. And we had the joy of having breakfast with you today. And it's just the way you look at each other or you tease each other. And those tiny little interactions, and it might be an assumption, but what I think I saw is that you're also curious about who you are and that this is something that changes all the time and that you're still on this journey together.
Mm. And I think it's really a blessing to have this solution focus. I mean, life is complicated somewhere and it could be easy to fall down to what is the problem. And this is a way of coming back from difficult period. What solution focus give us in our life with each other and our children and our family, it's really that it's not only a job, it's something you use for yourself because it's very useful.
And yet you don't need to be solution focused 24 hours, 7 days a week, where it's like finding the way back to it again and again. At least that's what it is for us a lot.
So Jocelyn, looking back on your solution focused journey and also on your journey with Insu and Steve, if there's one story maybe with Insu or Steve that made a difference for you and your life and your practice that we have not heard yet, what could that be?
Yeah. Of course, there is a lot of stories with Steve and Insu. I have a story with Steve. Steve at a conference. I think it was a conference in France. And Steve gets some question in the workshop. It was a critical question. And he was really congruent, consequent, keeping, yeah, we don't ask more question about problem or things like that. And it's the way, he was really cool. Like, not rude, but just keep in track in believing that it is what we are doing. And it was something I took with me because it became more easy for me to accept and to say, to critical people that, yeah, it's what we do and it works not for everybody, but it works for a lot of people. It works for me to work that way and I am comfortable with that. So it was like having Steve behind me in this cool position and I can stand for what I'm doing.
Wow. And nowadays we even know, not only feel it, but it's also evidence-based practice, and there's so many studies about that, and so many people doing it in so many different fields. And whenever somebody says, trust the model, for me it's not a trust, it's a knowledge. We know that it works.
So Jocelyn, may we invite you to give a challenge of the week to our audience, please?
Yeah. The challenge of the week could be for yourself. Set up something very small, and it doesn't need to be a new thing. It could be something you have been done before or you are doing and you like and it's useful for you. So set up that for a week before. Have some evaluation with somebody that know that you are keeping up this challenge, and yeah.
Yes, let's find something small that we want to keep going, and I'm looking forward to converse with you about that. So thank you very much for this challenge of the week and for this wonderful conversation, Jocelyn.
And fortunately for us, it's easy to find someone who knows what we're doing, what we're up to, and also evaluate that with that person. So thank you very much for being here, for being our guest on this podcast, and also for your work, for staying solution-focused for so long and being a role model for us, not only in doing it, but also in living it with your partner in your life, and whenever we see you and conversations, and yes, being curious and staying curious. And now, of course, we're curious. What was useful for you? How does the challenge of the week go? And what inspired you in the podcast with Jocelyn?
So please let us know and comment in the comment field of this podcast on www.sfventura.com/simplyfocuspodcast and then go to episode 84.
And now we're looking forward to have another beautiful day here in Montreal, and we're looking forward to seeing you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye, and thank you.
Goodbye.
Wow, what a great episode again. Do you also like the Simply Focus podcast? Then help Elfie and Dominic spread the word. Give the Simply Focus podcast a 5-star rating on iTunes, Google Play, and other platforms. Plus, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. This was Simply Focus podcast with Elfie Cherney and Dominic Godet, your podcast for a life in joy and ease.